Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here continuing our positional reviews today, and we've got a great coach guest for you. It's Coach DC of all 22 films. That's where you know him from. We're going to talk about the Ravens outside linebacker. Coach, how you doing?
Doing great, man. How about yourself?
You know, I can't complain other than, you know, the Ravens maybe should have gotten to play in Kansas City, and I could have gone to watch him play there. But that didn't happen. We had a kind of a difficult night. And then came to the realization, I think we just talked about this a little bit in our production meeting, that the Ravens actually really outplayed the Bengals in some ways in the last 2 weeks of the season, in particular the Ravens defense versus the Bengals offense, and how they look to be pretty well set up for the future, perhaps, for containing Joe Burrow.
Totally. I mean, it's a very weird dynamic that Ravens fans have to watch the Bengals make what looks like it could be another deep playoff run. It already is at this point in the AFC title game. Number one. Number two, we have to, on some level, recognize that our defensive players, defensive staff, stood there with them toe-to-toe and for large parts of the game really slowed them down and in some parts of the game shut them down. Mm-hmm. I think of the possession where the Ravens stopped the Bengals in the wild card game and then Geno Stone comes very close to blocking a punt. Runs into the punter.
Yeah.
And then what did we do immediately?
Stopped him again. Three and out.
Three and out at him again. Yeah. That is an extremely rare thing to do against an offense of that caliber. So I'm excited about the defense and about, you know, talking with you, obviously. So thank you for this opportunity. And really excited about the future of the Ravens defense. There's obviously a lot of question marks on the offense, but shouldn't be on the defense.
We're talking about a good position tonight. Outside linebacker. First thing I got to do is thank our sponsor, Liquid Death. The water that will brutally murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been good to us. Like you, you know, I think we probably come from the same angle on this. The Ravens began the season with a very severe lack of health at the position. They only had a very limited number of people could actually stand up and play. But then through the returns, the acquisition of JPP, it became really one of the strongest positional groups for the team. A safety position, very strong, helped out other position groups. And that ended up being the way for the outside linebacker group, but it sure didn't start the season.
Yeah, no doubt. I think there's a lot of evaluation still of during the season, definitely, evaluation of the outside linebacker group that retained that thought process or that fear from the beginning of the season when we had multiple guys go down in the preseason. I forget the guy's name who came to us from Miami. Vince Beagle, I think.
Yes, Vince Beagle.
And then the young guy, the second-year player. Daylon Hayes. You know, and so we lost guys, and then we didn't have Bowser. Obviously, we hadn't signed JPP. So, there were some question marks. But I thought that as the season went on, when those guys returned, not only was it a source of strength, but it was a position where guys were asked to do a lot. You know, they were somewhat versatile in their coverage. Malik Harrison just should be mentioned there as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And he played outside linebacker really the whole year, kind of on an unknown basis, but he played 21% of the snaps and he was in there most of the time at outside linebacker. He did stand up occasionally and take a few turns mm-hmm. at weak side, but most of that was at outside linebacker on early downs and particularly early in the season when they didn't have enough guys and, you know, they had to make do somehow.
I'm not sure how you do things once the games are over, but I'm generally like during the game, looking for players to evaluate, talk about, do videos on mm-hmm. clearly. And there was two or three times during the season where I thought I might do a video on Malik Harrison because I thought he played better than a lot of people would perceive him to. So I think that moving forward, who knows what happens with Justin Houston? Who knows what happens with JPP? Harrison's an interesting guy because I think we've got what 1 year left on him.
Yeah, so he'll. I assume he will make the team, and he's got multiple avenues to playing time this year. Can we like hold off a little bit maybe on talking about? I got a couple points to make on about him when we get down there, but
yeah, man.
But I did want to say that one of the things the Ravens didn't even have two outside linebackers per play at the beginning of the year. So yeah. The Ravens in the Martindale era have played a lot of three outside linebacker, and they played a fair amount of four outside linebacker, what I call race car, other people call it NASCAR and things like that. But the three outside linebacker rush packages, rush nickel and rush dime. They played a fair amount as well. And the outside linebacker usage per snap went from under two early in the year to well over two later in the year.
Right. You mean like per play?
Yeah, per play. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a, it was not only just the opportunities, the number of guys on the field, but I thought the quality of their play improved over the year as well. That was something that, you know, I know that OA is a source of, you know, discussion, let's put it that way. But there was, I thought, an improvement in almost everyone's play. The outlier, obviously, is Justin Houston. He had that three or four game stretch, which was otherworldly. But no, I agree with you, man. I think outside linebacker finished the year as a positional strength. And I think it will begin next year as a positional strength, particularly with the three guys we have coming back. I guess four with Harrison, possibly. Mm-hmm. And I would expect them to seriously consider Houston, you know, based on what you saw for when he was your situational pass rusher. You were talking about a real true weapon.
Yeah. So I you know, I certainly hope we'll see either, JPP or Houston come back. Really surprising how the snaps were divided there as the season went on. I kind of want to go through that a little bit as we go, but let's start at the top in terms of who had the most snaps for the team this year, which is, it is a little bit surprising to people who watched the season late and saw, you know, Adafi always play very significantly curtailed, but he still led the outside linebackers with 58% of snaps played for the year. I think, you know, it was an interesting year for him because he's forced into this Sam role to start the season. I think that actually stunted what he did quite a bit. What's your feeling on that?
No, I'm totally in line with everything you said. First of all, it doesn't surprise me that the snap count for the year for him was either the highest because, you know, he was the healthiest guy from week one to, you know, to the end of the season. JPP obviously not playing, I think, until what, week four? And then Houston missing time from week three to, I think, week seven. And I think there was one game late in the season, maybe week 18, where Houston only played like six snaps. It was the Bengals game in the regular season finale. But to your point about about Owe, I thought there was moments earlier in the season where I suspected that he looked like he had some type of shoulder harness on. I saw a limited range of motion in his upper body. And I thought that some people would just say, oh, he's just tight. He's not loose. It was a little different from my eyes. And I thought later on in the year, there were some things that looked better. I know that the big block against the Falcons on the third and seven, when he got jumped by the right tackle, everybody talks about that or wants to talk about it. I saw improvement in Owe, to be honest with you. And I see no reason for the Ravens to seriously consider edge defender early in this draft. I just don't, not with the guys we have coming back.
I'm with you all the way on that. I think that one of the things, I'm interested to hear your comments on the shoulder, because this is something where his run defense, particularly early in the year when he was playing every down, wasn't where I had hoped it would be. And I agree. When he came back, he really demonstrated a lot of value as a situational pass rusher that improved as the year went on. In fact, he had his best game, I would say, in the playoff game. He had what really were three sack-worthy plays. One, he actually got the sack and he clubbed the guy down. Just a wonderful, you know, big time pass rusher move. Then the next time he closed in as Houston got there too. Houston got the sack, which I guess is only fair in a sense because Houston lost $1 million or whatever in bonus to
Ohio
thing. And then one of the really key plays in the game, the Ravens got the ball back with that one final chance that ended up with 4th and 20 or whatever because Owe ran down Burrow 5 yards downfield on a 3rd and 9. And that's a play, that's a sack plus five. I mean, that ended a drive. So
I thought, you know, I'm not a guy who really likes to listen to NFL announcers, but I thought Collinsworth did a great job of mentioning those two plays for Owe. That play, and the other one, the pass drop where he got in the window of the slant to Chase and the ball was thrown a little high.
Yep.
You know, to your point from earlier too about Owe playing Sam, stunting his growth. Maybe I wouldn't have described it that way, but I think it's absolutely accurate because he was asked to do things that Tyus Bowser does extremely well. And Owe can do them. He can certainly drop back to pass, but his instincts are not to look for receivers. His instincts are not to swivel his head and look to the outside for a crosser. The number two receiver went out. Let me look for number one coming in. That's something that an inside linebacker or, you know, a nickel DB does instinctively because they've done it thousands of times. Owe's just not meant to do that. Having said that, we did get two really good pass drops out of him in the playoff game, along with, like you said, the tracking Burrow down. His spin move in the regular season finale against the left guard, you know, the split sack play with him in Houston, right? That was sick. That was sick.
No,
I'm excited for Owe, and I push back on people who talk about 24-year-old guys as finished products, you know?
I don't react to it just because everybody's entitled to their lousy opinion. But Owe honestly had a very good year as a pass rusher. And more importantly, his vector's headed in the right direction. He's got a green arrow going up, you know, in terms of how he's been improving his play during the year, if you're thinking stock market teams. But he played so much better after Bowser returned. Good pressure rate. I actually have him scored with more pressures than PFF. Now, PFF is fairly generous with pressures, but I have more of them that the offensive line is responsible for and that the pass rusher gets, because when the cone is invaded, that's very distracting to a quarterback. And he's been better at pushing, it's mostly by bull rush, pushing his opponent into that cone and having some distracting pressure. And the Ravens lived off the cleanup sack this year. You know, they had a high sack total as a team, but it wasn't a lot of one-on-one pass rush wins. There's some of those, but mostly it was first guy gets pressure, second guy gets a sack.
Yeah, it's like a guy who, the Ravens weren't a one-punch knockout guy, to use a boxing analogy. The Ravens were a cumulative knockout guy, you know, a guy that gets the fifth or sixth rounder based on the cumulative effect of the punches. And I got no problem with that, you know, me personally.
Yeah,
we had some guys win one-on-one matchups occasionally, but I thought those guys did a great job.
It should be something that they keep. I hope it's strategically what they are kind of going for, because one of the things it's a byproduct of is not using as aggressive a pass rush. So if you a lot of teams, they have to get quick pressures and they have to generate free runners. To do so, they have to take risk, which I'm fine with defenses gambling. But if you can get home with a four-man pass rush, and you still use a variety of four-man pass rushes, because you know there's four where you blitz two inside linebackers and drop two outside linebackers, and there's four where you just rush the four, right. And they could be each effective in their own way. But what you're doing is giving an opportunity for seven men to cover, which will get you just a little more protection and an opportunity for that one safety you identify who might be deep in cover two to come in and cancel a route.
Yep.
That might be the read. So you create all kinds of opportunity for the pass rush.
And then it's all related. And then someone who didn't win on their initial move or their initial, you know, hand swipe or whatever, they win on the second or even the third effort. And I think that's something that I've tried to talk about on the channel, and I've probably never done a great job of describing it, but I'll try again here. When you have the athletic guys and you let them do what they practice, let the edge guys do what they practice. Let them do what they've done for 12 years consistently. I think that their second or third engagement with an offensive tackle or a guard, they're going to be more likely to win, in my opinion, because they've been doing these things for a long time.
Third snap in the game or third?
Second or third effort on a single play.
Okay.
As opposed to let's do the opposite. Let's say we drop out Owe and we rush Patrick Queen. Now, there actually are two examples that go against this, but a second or third effort by a guy who's not practiced pass rush skills for a dozen years is not going to have the cumulative effect of a win when the secondary does their job initially. And like you said, takes away a route. And now the quarterback is a half second or three quarters of a second behind in getting the ball out. You get a win, a sack, where you didn't really get a win on the first engagement. Again, I need to type this out at some point, this thought process, but letting the guys do what they're supposed to be doing positionally and what they practice all the time, they're better able to react on that second or third engagement, hand move that doesn't work, counter that doesn't work, you know, and then, oh, now the quarterback's now on his third read and my third effort or my third engagement with the offensive lineman wins. And I think that letting organic pass rushers, do what they are supposed to do organically, gets us those late developing sacks, kind of like you were alluding to.
Yeah, that's the high motor sacks, we would, you know, refer those. But that's a great explanation of it. One of the things that is big about OA's season, I want to move on after get a chance to respond to this, is that not going against the naked left tackle really hurt him. And it's usually the left tackle, but it's, but you know, being the rush linebacker, you line up against a tackle who doesn't have a tight end on that side. Mm-hmm. And what that allows you to do is focus more on how you're going to set up that player. And you could talk about it in first engagement, second engagement terms, but in terms of the first move that OA makes, a left tackle that, or the tackle he's opposite, has to overreact to that because of OA's ridiculous athleticism.
Yeah.
So he has his second move should be all the more devastating. So he just needs to develop that Euro step and whatnot, and then be able to use it and regularly build on his toolkit working against that naked tackle, as opposed to working against, I'm taking a block, or I'm taking a chip, or I'm taking something from this tight end, or maybe it's two tight ends on me, or maybe it's a tight end and a tackle. But in any case, I've got the possibility of multiple players on that side, and then my pass rush, you know, mechanics have to change because of that. And then I have to take off six plays a game because I have to drop the coverage.
Yep. You know,
so it's nice to be nice to see him get that advantage. I'm very bullish on him for 23.
Agreed. I'm one of those guys that thinks him, Ojabo, and Bowser get the job done if we don't bring back Houston or JPP, mm-hmm. along with, you know, somewhere in there because of roster, you know, limitations. You got to have a guy who plays some special teams. It's very mm-hmm. difficult to ask, you know, particularly if Houston comes back and he's used as a situational pass rusher. I think it presents some roster problems for us in terms of special teams. You know, you need your, what was it, Chuck Wiley? You need your guys like that are going to be outside linebacker possibilities to use in a game if there's a sudden rash of injuries, but they're going to offer you something on special teams too. I like Owe. I'm glad we got him. You know, young guy, big, strong. You know, at some point, you know, he's going to have three sacks in a two-game stretch, or five sacks in a three-game stretch, and then he'll go cold for 2 or 3 weeks. Look at what Justin Houston did this year.
Sure.
He had that ridiculous stretch and then didn't get a sack for 5 weeks, something like that. You know, that's just the nature of the game as a pass rusher, man. It's just like home run hitters.
Let's move on and talk a little bit about JPP, because he was the real surprise in terms of snap percentage. And he played 48% of the snaps. That was second, and it was not even close. Nobody else was even close. I mean, the next highest is Houston at 36.6% of the snaps. But JPP came on week four. The Ravens used him as a run defender this year. Very solid early down guys. Obviously, he had some pressure he provided. He provided some great batted passes. The guy, you know, I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere about getting his hands up and batting a pass down. But yeah, I'm looking at him. PFF didn't really grade him too highly. He graded well for me. He was often showing up in my star treatment as far as being in the notes. How did you see him this year?
No, totally in line. You know, me personally, I don't have access to PFF's rating stuff, and that's by design because I don't care what they say.
Sure.
I'll be real with you. But no, I'm totally in line with what you're describing. I thought as the year went on, he was cleaner, more precise. And I thought he gave the right tackle from the Bengals hell. Mm-hmm. When he was matched up against him. I'm talking about the last two games, not Lyle Collins. I thought he played well against the run.
Adeniji, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he would. And who's, you know, a pretty good player. He just played very well last week against the Bills. I thought Ojabo was, excuse me, I thought JPP was very balanced, good against the run, and very savvy. He knows when to get his hands up, like you're describing, with the batted passes. Super high-level awareness. I see him communicating to guys pre-snap on Ojabo's strip sack of Burrow in week 18. Prior to the snap, JPP is pointing to that side. And then I think he takes his hand and kind of pushes it up in the air, like kind of like the ref does to kind of restart a clock or something. Yep. You know, I remember Suggs used to do that all the time. He'd be down in his stance and he would like lift his hand up and he'd point up. He's telling the DBs and people, hey, I see high stances. I see fingers barely touching the ground. Probably pass. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that for a fact because obviously we can't hear what JPP was saying unless he was mic'd up for something. But I think he's super smart. I think he had an impact on the field, Ken. And I think that him and Houston have an impact in practice and off the field as well.
Yeah, I agree. He's a very savvy player. Those two players, I think we're going to see one of them return. And we can talk about that a little bit at the end, prognosticate. But I like JPP too. And Houston, obviously, you know, seems to be a terrific pass rush teacher. Not everyone in the NFL is willing to share, you know, what they know about playing the game, even with their teammates. You know, it's a league. It's the not for long league. You move around a lot. Why do you want to give away your number one pass rush move to somebody else. But I think Houston certainly has clearly, in terms of showing how he practices, gets his motor skills down, gets his muscle memory going, has really shown that he's willing to be a teacher.
Agreed. We originally this year, we compared him to Yoda on our on the channel. And then someone brought up Mace Windu. I don't even know who that is. I'm not a big Star Wars, you know, person, but just the fact that it's an older guy who's been there, he's seen everything and he's done it. I loved what they did with him. There was a 2-week stretch where I thought they kicked him inside on pass plays. And there was one sack he had, I think, against the Saints where Queen, he's lined up at 3 technique against the left guard, and Queen picks the guard. So Queen intentionally runs into him. Last year, Queen had a play like that against someone. He kind of got made fun of for it because he whiffed. He whiffed on the pick. You know?
Hard to do. But,
yeah, well, I mean, I don't even remember the circumstances, but point is, Queen was really good at that this year, like picking the offensive lineman, letting that guy, you know, scoot underneath. And Houston's so versatile. I look at him as a guy that you can look at on another team at the offensive line and say, okay, the right guard has trouble with this move, and Justin Houston's got that move. whatever the move is that someone struggles with, Justin Houston's got that move, in my opinion. Although I will say, it seemed like he played better from the right side than the left. I don't know if you have any recollection of that.
Meaning
in terms of pass rush,
meaning as an RDE or on a 4-man front being on the right side. Okay, that would typically not be where he would line up on a passing down, but it could be. It actually could be either side on a passing down, right?
Yeah, he seemed like when we would classify, you know, outside linebackers or edge rushers, we would try to find a left-handed kid, you know, because we were looking for somebody to play on our right. And he seems to play better on our right. And I always refer to it from the defensive side, side because that's, you know, that's my background. And I do it intentionally too, to piss off offensive guys, because they refer to everything from their side. So I do it intentionally. But I thought Houston had an amazing season. To me, there was a 3 or 4 or 5 game stretch where I thought statistically what he was doing for the number of reps he had was, again, I don't, you're a numbers person. I find it hard to believe that what he did, what was it, week 7 to 11, something like that, has been from recreated that often.
Giants game through the Carolina game. And that's not that many total pass rush snaps, but he had something like, I want to say he had about like 110 pass rush snaps during that stretch, and had, you know, 7 sacks maybe.
Yeah.
So it was higher than that. I think it was a very high individual sack rate. That was in there, and maybe I'm thinking of his pressure rate was even higher than that. But anyway,
not sustainable. We knew that, right? We knew that. We've heard that word as Ravens fans for years. But I just don't. To me, it reminds me of like a home run hitter who, you know, he hit 7 bombs over the weekend. You know, something that's and then Monday, Tuesday hits 3 more. You know, something insane. It was an amazing thing to watch. I think Justin Houston, just like JPP, they'll both be in the NFL next year. And I didn't think that about JPP at the beginning of the year when we signed him. I was like, okay, what do we got here? And even in that first game he played for us, I thought things looked rather rusty. I never saw anything like that with Justin Houston, a moment where he didn't look sharp or the hand placement wasn't there. He had some losses, but hell, I mean, you're going against starting offensive linemen in the NFL, you're going to lose plenty of plays.
There's so many things I liked about Houston, but this year he had a fantastic cleanup sack year. He did very little bit as a beat the guy right off the line of scrimmage. You know, it might have been two to three, I would say, of his, what, 10 and a half sacks when he, including the playoff. So it was mostly cleanup, and that's okay. That fits into the Ravens scheme very well. He also delivered some of the initial pressure on other people's sacks as well. But when he was really rolling in there from, you're right, it's week 7 to 11 are the ones, then that stretch was a lot of cleanup stuff. Yep. His interception too, wasn't that batted down at the line of scrimmage by Urban, right? Urban did that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay. Week 7
against 8? Tampa Bay. I guess 8.
You may see your coworkers cracking open a can in your 9 a.m. stand-up meeting, but it's most likely not beer. It's a New Mountain spring water called Liquid Death. You've heard me talk about this many times. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it'll brutally murder your thirst. Plus, its infinitely recyclable tallboy cans are helping to be a, bring a death to plastic bottles. Did you know plastic's not even really recyclable anymore? It ends up just going to a landfill because it's not profitable to recycle. Meanwhile, aluminum is recyclable and profitable for recycling facilities. You guys know how much I love Liquid Death. It's in everything I do. I take it to work. I take it to the ball club. I take it when I'm out with the kids. I got them right here on my can on my desk because I'm recording a podcast. I'm always with it. What's cool now is I'm seeing you guys on Twitter talk about how you're grabbing your cans and going to work. So send me those stories about what you're doing and how you're cracking open a tall boy in odd situations because, hey, it's water. And not only is it water, it's the best water that you can go out there and buy. It's cold. You can drink it with whatever you're doing. So going out there, get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find a Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool by going to liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
So anyway, I thought too that the one thing I'll say about Houston, and you know, you've been analyzing the Ravens and NFL for longer than I have, there's certain pass rushers, and comparing Houston and Owe, which is kind of unfair to Owe, but Houston plays at a particular angle of his choosing. Owe, in my opinion, is a little less committed to his angle. I'm not just talking about, you know, a bull rush or whatever. Having said that about Houston, though, I think he's committed to his angle that he's choosing. If he sees something mid play that the tackle is doing, an overset, an underset, whatever, he's able to adjust. You know, he's very balanced. I feel like he keeps himself in a tight framework, which allows himself to adapt within that space, whereas certain other younger edge rushers get a little bit out of control. Houston is very under control. It reminds me of some of the highest level boxers that are very sharp and precise and efficient.
So there's a difference there because Owe is when Owe really turns it on and becomes the pass rusher that I think he'll be, and I think you probably do too, mm-hmm. he's going to force errors. And Justin Houston, what you're describing, is really creating unforced errors or waiting for unforced errors. But they happen so often, and he can take advantage of them so well. I mean, he's like a very good counterpuncher in that regard. Yep. Owe, it's first move and gone. First move, yep. Tackle overreacts, he can be gone because he's so, you know, special as an athlete still.
I think we've been very blessed to have Justin Houston. Mm-hmm. He last year had, what, 5.5 sacks?
Justin Houston the previous year. That sounds about right. I don't keep track of him, honestly, like that, but I'll look it up while you're doing.
Had a huge moment, I think, in the home game against the Bengals, got held. Home game against the Browns last year. Clearly had Baker Mayfield dead to rights, mm-hmm. got held. And then I think in the Chargers game, maybe it wasn't the Chargers game. Anyway, I felt like last year he only had 5.5. It very easily could have been 8.5 or 9.
Yeah. Great 2-year stretch, 4.5 actually in 21, 9.5 in 22, one more added in the playoffs. So, you know, hell of a run here for Houston. And you know, it's going to be, I think there's room for one of them on the roster. I just don't think there's room for both. And I'd like to do a little prognostication when we get to the end of this about that. So I have a little segment on percentages, but let's move on to Tyus Bowser. 34% of the snaps returned in week 9. You know, one of the things that was nice about Bowser, there was lots of multiple things that were nice, but he returned exactly when Roquan came on and the whole defense just looked completely different from that point on.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Tyus Bowser, so I have to sometimes watch the film of him multiple times and make sure I'm not seeing things that aren't there, because I am a big fan of his. Not just the story of his progression of his career. First of all, I believe he's signed to a really team-friendly contract. Are you aware of that?
It's 3 years, $18 million, and this was year 2 of it, I believe. But right. I will just – sometimes I'm wrong, and there's an extension he signed for one more year. So let me look it up while you're talking. Go ahead.
So I think he – last year in 2021, which I don't think it's fair to really look at his sack numbers this year and judge them, because he didn't come back until past midseason, right?
That's right, week 9.
Yeah, last year had 5.5 sacks, had a sack wiped out against the Bears on a penalty by Humphrey, had another sack wiped out against maybe the Chargers on another defensive penalty. So should have had 7.5. And I thought he had two other plays last year where he got held clearly. You know, I thought Bowser last year played at a super high level. I didn't see the same level this year from Bowser. That doesn't mean I think he played poorly. I think he played well. I think Bowser seems to be a guy who would benefit from being on the field a lot. And with our situation with so many guys being available there, I don't want to use the word rotation, but we wanted to use all of those guys. And in pass rush situations, if you were going to pick between Bowser or Justin Houston, I think there was a certain point in the season where you said, I'm just going to put Justin Houston on the field on 3rd and 8. And I wouldn't criticize that decision at all.
Well, I still like to have Bowser on the field at that point, too, because you're a Sam who can drop at that point or even playing Tyus Bowser off balls is a freaking hellish weapon to put on against them. They've even played Bowser some in the middle. When he does play in the middle, he usually drops. When he plays off ball, he often rushes. It's just a matter of him, you know, taking an angle like Patrick Queen and finding his spot there. But they have so many ways to deploy that. And the more the merrier on those pass rush downs for me. I like seeing the race car package, having 4 outside linebackers out there, whether it's 4 outside linebackers and a lineman plus, you know, 5 defensive backs and an inside linebacker, or it could even just be 6 defensive backs with 4 outside linebackers. And probably Roquan Smith's going to be on the field no matter what from now on. That was one of the, you know, obviously one of the things, the defense was very affected by the acquisition of Smith because they changed to a committed nickel team.
Yeah.
And that doing it, that took a lot of pressure off the secondary. It also took some pressure off outside linebacker because it meant Malik Harrison obviously could completely focus on that position. And it actually took pressure off cornerback, which is not usual for the inside linebacker position, but basically it meant that, you never have to find a 4th cornerback, but not only that, your 3rd safety, who is going to be on the field playing dimeback a fair amount, now moves and becomes your regular slot corner.
Yeah.
And that was, it actually had a wonderful cascading effect on the entire defense. I'm not a fan of nickel. I like dime in a relative sense. I like it for a lot of reasons that are way beyond the scope of this show. We'll talk about it in the inside linebacker position. But anyway, the acquisition of Roquan obviously affected every level of the defense.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. The acquisition of Roquan aligns with Tyus Bowser coming back, like you mentioned already, right?
Yep.
Additionally, Kyle Hamilton suffered an injury and was out for 1 game, maybe the 2nd or 3rd game that we had Roquan Smith. And I thought the defense looked poor the week that Kyle Hamilton didn't play. So those 3 guys, either A, coming back, B being traded or acquired in the case of Roquan, or C coming back from an injury, really solidified things. Look, in terms of Bowser, getting back to him, I am such a huge fan of his. I remember specific plays of his, okay, because I watched them and I celebrate the fact that he's making them. I remember the end of the Browns game at home in 2021. He made all 3 plays to end that game, starting at the end, the 4th down play, targeting a tight end. Tyus Bowser covered him man-to-man and tackled him short of the first down. Mm-hmm. The previous play, he dropped back in coverage and I think was responsible for an incomplete pass. The play prior to that, he rushed the passer and got pressure on the quarterback. And that's a very rare set of skills for any linebacker or any player, really. He's a do-it-all guy out there. And I think if he's healthy all year next year and back to 100%, I would say, and this is very arbitrary, watching him play, I would say he played to like 90, 92% of his capability for me, even though I think he played well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There definitely was a kind of a ramp up in his play, but he did so much for the Ravens, even though he was there, because him returning at Sam meant everybody else could go back to their normal responsibilities pretty much. Okay, JPP, he's an early down run defender most of the time. And Owe goes back to being a rush linebacker, which is where he's going to be better. And to have him on the field as a coverage asset, again, was enormous to the defense, but is also enormous to the pass rush in terms of showing different looks and being able to comfortably drop into coverage.
Yep.
Bowser's still not very often targeted for when he drops. And he did not drop as much this year as he had in the past, but absolutely terrific player.
No, you're what you just said is something that I try to describe to the guys in my Discord. It's not just, you know, which player is dropping. When is he dropping? You know, is it a smart decision for him to do so? It's the quality of the pass drop. Mm-hmm. It's the spatial awareness. Okay, I'm to the boundary. I've got more space out here. I also have maybe a corner sitting in the flats. I don't need to expand with two out. I need to sit here and wait for one to come in. And that's just repetition, number one, in-game intelligence, and formational awareness, understanding the width of receivers and tight ends. Bowser's got all of that. I think I look at Tyus Bowser as a guy who, if he was playing for teams that made deep playoff runs, you know, championship games, Super Bowl games, he's a guy who could turn in a sack and a half, an interception, and six tackles in a Super Bowl and make millions of dollars for himself because he's good to very good at all of those things.
Yeah, I completely agree. He shows up, you know, we keep notes on every play. That's our process. And then we have an index column that tells me the key Ravens defenders in each play. So I can go ahead and pick those out and put them out in this star treatment section. But it's also just for me looking up, you know, when did 54 show up on individual plays? Oh, he's blocked on this run play. That didn't look that good. Or, oh, he lost the edge on this play. But then, you know, it's got all those highlights in there as well. And I try to just give that to people directly when a player has a game with a lot of highlight plays in particular, really, you know, plays very well. And there'll be a couple negative ones. Just because, hey, nobody plays a game without warts in the NFL. You've got some negative plays, so you list all of these plays and let the reader kind of choose about that. But he is one of the few outside linebackers who makes great plays in every type. Suggs actually very similar in a lot of ways. You know, not the best pure pass rusher, and that Bowser is not that. Had the awareness of Suggs is legendary. His ability to understand when a screen pass is coming. I mean, just, you might as well try and sneak the sun past a rooster, as he used to say about a fastball and Hank Aaron. You know, it's just impossible. So anyway, I love what Bowser is. By the way, signed through 24, not just 23.
Okay. What you were describing a minute ago, your process, this is why, I think I said this one time before when I was on your show. So people listening, I would tend to trust your designation of how a player performed in a given game versus some other rating services. And here's why. You're completing the process of evaluating them, and then you describe a second column. You're doing it for multiple reasons. You're doing it to evaluate the play of the players. You're doing it also because you love the Ravens, and you want to have knowledge of how the players played comprehensively over a period of time versus other rating services that are just rating that play. And it might, and this is my complaint about some of the rating services. It's not the same person grading the same team every week.
Yeah.
You are consistently grading the Ravens. You understand, okay, weeks 1 through 3 always drops into the boundary, stunk. And now week 5 and 6, oh, I'm seeing improvement here. You make a note, a designation of that. Your final evaluation of Owe or whoever it is, Bowser, is going to have recognized some understanding of the progression of how they improved versus other rating services that just try to apply a simple numerical designation to a player. And that is all encompassing. And I just don't think it is. So the process you just described to me, I think, is the way it should be.
I appreciate the kind words. I mean, a lot coming from you, Coach. And you know, we've evolved our process over the years, but the other person I really want to thank for this is my wife, because without her actually writing on these pages, I wouldn't be able to read it later. I cannot. There's other things I take notes on. I can't even read my own handwriting, but she's wonderful. And she gives me this nice indexed column, this wonderful sheet of notes that, you know, then I can turn into an article at a later time and we pick some players, but she also helps me type that.
is it a two person job or a three person job or what?
It's two. And I used to do it as just a one person job, and it was overwhelming me. And then I was collecting more information. And when she started jumping in, boy, I mean, things go faster. It used to be the offensive line article. And I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but the offensive line article would take me like 5 hours to write, because it's like going back from page to screen to page to screen with individual blocks and notations of time and whatnot is very difficult. But I can do it in about 40 minutes with her. If I'm looking at the screen, the other time references, we call it out. And the article, if you've seen it before, is fairly formulaic in terms of what information we're producing. Like, we're just basically saying here's all the pressure events, a half share, a full share, this share, you know, what was the type of move, or was he beaten left, beaten right, bold, whatever it might've been. Was he shed, you know, this kind of thing. It's rote, but it tells, you know, it tries to tell that story the same way each week. And when I do that with her, 40 minutes and we're done. So that's really, I couldn't do it without her.
So the reason why I asked you whether it was a 2-person job or a 3-person job is the way that I was taught to scout. Mm-hmm. Again, we're talking prior to huddle. So you're scouting by hand, was a 2-person job. You know, you could get something as a one person present, but you really couldn't, you know, get as much. You would have a camera there, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But you wanted to get as much documented, like you said, live, and have eyes on the game in order to document it. So interesting stuff, man. I think you guys do a great job.
You had one documenter and the other guy was the caller, and then you switched off, or how would you do it?
Yeah, different data each person was describing. So we had a shell of the formation drawn up. And so, like, I would draw the formation. Depending on who's with you and how much you trust that person and what they know, if it's a running back coach, you may say, hey, give me the running back steps. So I want you to, every play, diagram the running back steps. Let me know if there's a counter step mm-hmm. out of this formation and not out of that one. That's why in my videos, a lot of times I talk about formations, because offensive coaches, they have formations where they don't run counter, or they have formations where they do run counter. And so you have to prepare your players for that. The only way you can prepare your players for that is if you know it yourself. And scouting was one of the best things for me to learn whatever I do know about the game, you know, and that's then it great. Just became a snowball.
Fantastic stuff, coach. And you see, you know, a defensive coordinator's group there. And I don't know if the offense is in a separate box or just on a separate row or whatever, but there's a lot of recording going on by those assistant coaches that you can tell is just being then funneled up to the head offensive coordinator, or defensive coordinator. I guess the head is redundant there, but you know, at halftime, they're going to have a chance to get together. When the other team has the ball, they're going to have a chance to get together and discuss it. So it's great to see that process. But what I'd really love to see is what they talk about when the other team's group is on the field. So if they're defense coordinators, when their offense has the ball, I'd love to hear what's going on in that room at that
point. And we can do a show on that if you want. I can only tell you from a high school, you know, perspective, and removing the expletives, obviously. So.
That sounds like fun. It really does sound like fun. But let's
move on. It's fun stuff.
We've got Malik Harrison to talk about. 21% of the snaps, most of those at outside linebackers. We mentioned really was the outside linebacker in the early downs, early in the season when the Ravens didn't have enough guys to stand up. Solid edge setter. I thought this may be a year where he gets to go move back to inside linebacker if Patrick Queen were to be traded. Your feelings about his future?
I mean, I think Malik Harrison plays 10 or 12 years in the NFL.
Okay. Wow. I can imagine one scenario where that would happen, but he's going to have to become Albert McClellan to have a career like that. He's a core special teams player. Doesn't really get off the pass rusher. So far we've got McClellan 2 for 2, good run defender, good edge setter. Perfect. That's McClellan. And he's been a fine tackler and special teams containment guy on the two coverage units. That certainly is McClellan. He is the kind of guy I would look at. If you can get past the fact that they used a third round draft pick on him and just say sunk capital, don't worry about it, and turn him into Anthony Levine or Albert McClellan the rest of his career, I think it could happen.
Yeah, he impressed me early in the season playing into the boundary. You know, I wouldn't trust him play into the field. Now, in the NFL, the hashes are close together, right? So, mm-hmm. People listening, you know, keep in mind that a high school coach or even a college coach talking about field and boundary, it may sound like it may sound overrated or overstated. I guess it's not. Even in the NFL, you can look at certain formations, trips being one of them. Last year, I probably need to do a video on something like this. Last year in the database that I have for all NFL teams, I had like 426 designations of trips. Out of those 426, like 290 of them, the trips was to the field. So to me, getting back to Malik Harrison and trying to relate it to that, he's a guy I want to the boundary. I don't want him in space against smaller, quicker receivers.
Right.
Even in some situations to the boundary, particularly like 2021, you remember Travis Kelce's long touchdown catch from midfield. That was an attempt at a double team by Justin Houston and Malik Harrison. I would say that's probably a bad tactical decision to double team with those two guys. But Malik ends up leaving Kelce, and Kelce takes it to the house from like 47 yards. I thought early in the year he played well to the boundary. Pass drops were solid. Run, like you said, run defense was solid. And then when you want to formationally, you can slide him back to inside linebacker because he has that versatility.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, like you said earlier, he's going to be on the team. And depending on the health of Ojabo and Owe and all those guys, you know, they seem all completely good now. I think Harrison gets on the field, plays special teams, like you said, and there's a place for him. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ken. There was like a 5 or 6 game stretch in 2020 where Malik Harrison played really well. And then we didn't really see that guy in 2021. And we all know that, you know, he had the injury during the bye week that really stunted his development with the franchise. This year, I thought, was a solid little comeback for him.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, it was a little short-lived because of JPP signing and all those guys. And like you alluded to, Malik Harrison is never going to be an 8-10 sack a year guy. You know, he'd probably be lucky to get to 5. Yeah. Right. But I don't think they'll be asking him to get sacks. I think they'll be asking him to drop out to the boundary, be physical with tight ends when you get a tight end to the boundary. I thought he played well, and then he kind of disappeared for parts of the season. But correct me if I'm wrong, there was like a 2-game stretch, week 8, week 9, where he played a little more than he had once Houston came back, once OA came back. And I'm not sure why that was.
Yeah, obviously, you know, when did he play most? Well, first of all, he was done with his defensive snaps by about week 8. He played 36 snaps against Tampa Bay in week 8.
Okay, that was the one. All right.
And he had 249 for the year, but effectively when Bowser returned, he lost his job. And then he's only in there for a little bit of early down run defense, almost never in the second half. It's usually early in the game and early downs they would have him in there. When the other players are healthy, he's not your ideal guy, but he's a great special teams guy. He's a good versatile player for two positions, inside and outside linebackers. Not too many players who really do both of those things well. And I think Malik Harrison can give you a little bit at both those positions. That's why I think he's got a chance. Yeah. If 23 will be his last year with the Ravens, unless the Ravens do something about it. So the question is he a guy sometime in mid-23, if things are going okay, maybe they're not going great. Maybe he's continued to be a special teams player, hasn't done a whole lot, hasn't played a whole lot of inside linebacker snaps, but they like how he's practicing. Do you think they try and grab him up for a 2-year extension at that point for vet min plus a little bit? Be like an Anthony Levine type contract, or, you know, the vet min plus $400,000 a bonus spread over 2 years.
Yeah, you said it. When you have someone who can play inside linebacker and outside linebacker, what you're describing a 4-3 Sam. The 4-3 Sam plays to the tight end side and I hate this phrase, but I'll say it, as an off-ball linebacker. And then when they walk him up, he plays outside a tight end in what's called a slid 50 or the underfront. A person who can do both of those things, like you said, man, there's value in that. And play special teams, there's value in that. If someone goes down, if unfortunately a Bowser goes down, you know, mid-game, you can play Harrison at Sam some. Again, certain players you have to protect. And he's a guy who I would never want to the field athletically, you know. But outside of that situation, yeah, value and the situation you're describing, possibly, you know, keeping him at a really low salary, getting him locked in. I mean, I can see where something like that would happen. Is he going to be a superstar for us? No, but you know, he's a solid player. You win football games, you know, with the depth of your roster. And I think this year the Ravens won some football games with the depth of our roster, particularly. Well, we almost won a damn playoff game, you know, without our starting quarterback. Right. So, you know, the depth of our roster is a strength.
Yeah, absolutely. Mentioned by DaCosta, not that it matters because we'll make our own judgment about whether or not depth matters. I think it's mattered at so many positions for the Ravens. Safety this year, they really tested their depth.
but it stood up to it. You know, Geno Stone came in. I thought I had a terrific year, and Hamilton, you know, figures out how to cover for the Ravens not having enough cornerbacks, which is unreal. It's one of the really big breakthroughs of the season. So I depth matters, and hopefully the Ravens won't, in their need to cut a lot of corners to get Lamar Jackson signed, won't make some decisions about depth that they'll really regret.
You keep that depth around as best you can, because I think, well, even last year, Ken, 2021, the depth of the roster in a season when you have catastrophic injuries allowed them to compete with, well, I mean, the Rams and the Packers came to Baltimore and we competed with both of them. I think it was because of the depth of the roster. It certainly wasn't because of our offensive efficiency in those games. And it certainly wasn't because of our, you know, our defensive out scheming people. Our depth goes further down the roster than a lot of other teams. Yeah, that's an asset.
Yeah, it really showed at this position, particularly with the next guy, David Ajabo, who only could get on the field for a handful of snaps all year. It's not because he wasn't practicing fast enough, although we don't really know. They got him in for one snap in, I forget even what game it was, might have been against the Steelers, but it was
15-16. Yeah.
Yeah, it was in that range. And then they brought him back for 20 snaps in week 18, after he was rode the inactive list for one or two more weeks. Mm-hmm. And then they had him on for about 20 snaps in that game. And he picked up that first cherry popping sack fumble from behind of Burrow, which, by the way, just completely reminded me of Queen's sack. I think it was also his first of Burrow in 2020. It was another one of these come from behind. What do you call it? Cleanup plays.
Yep. Yeah. First of all, it makes you understand when McDonald was signed as the DC, it makes you understand why there were people saying this is a drastic shift from Wink, because he's just going to rush four and get organic pressure. Well, he had Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson, you know, and Ojabo, one thing from college that you saw that really is just evidenced again by that sack of Burrow. When he hit people, running backs or quarterbacks in that season at Michigan, they fumbled. I don't know how many forced fumbles he had, but it was a lot in Michigan. He made explosive plays, explosive athlete, regardless of what some of us would have liked to have done with that pick, a super smart pick, even though, you know, we didn't get essentially an entire year of playing out of him.
That's important. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, sorry, man. Top of the first round talent. If you look at the film from Michigan, his final year, that's just a fact. Terrible, you know, that, I mean, some of these guys, man, in the draft process, like, what are you even out there working out for, David? Like, you're already a top 15 pick, you know, and then you go out there and tear an Achilles. Sucks to be him, but he's come back, thankfully. I think he's got a bright future as a pass rusher. He probably looks a little bit more explosive than Owe at this point.
Could be. We'll see. I haven't made up my mind on that based on like the 23 snaps. There's obviously a lot going on the practice field. We don't know, but the big win from this year was he didn't lose it developmentally. And that was the big fear for me, was they're drafted in the second round. He's going to miss the entire season because of when the Achilles happened, you know, fairly late. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he got back on the field, actually got a sack, played some snaps, looked pretty good. I'm very keen on that for what it means for 2023. So excited about that. Really excited they activated it for the playoff game. A little surprised too, frankly.
Me too. I didn't think that we could have five outside linebackers activated, none of which who play special teams, but we did it. And I'm with you. I think it's exciting to have him and Owe are young, and Bowser's what, 27?
Bowser, about that. Well, I'll look it up right now.
So it's not like those, either of those three guys is old, you know. Obviously Houston and JPP are excited. You know, if someone falls, if something crazy happens and some really talented guy, you know, becomes available, I don't know how you pass on some of these guys, but the Ravens are going to have to, you know, for real. There's no reason to draft another edge guy, in my opinion. I know that there's going to be people who have different opinions. Oh, we need to draft a guy who can get 15 sacks. There aren't too many of them walking around. There just aren't. And signing one of those guys or trading for him in free agency is ridiculous. number two and number three, A lot of those guys have those numbers for 3 or 4 years and then don't recreate it.
They won't be available at pick 22, so we won't have to worry about it. But if there was the guy that they really loved, and it could be any position, and it's not cornerback or it's not wide receiver, more than in past years, they're going to have to consider trading the pick and dumping down to get the proper value on a player that is at a position of need, which is really bad, by the way. That's you don't want to go into the draft with a first, no second, and other teams who are trading with you knowing that, hey, they're looking for a cornerback or a wide receiver, so we can fleece them a little bit on this trade.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's where you tell me, you know, where you are. I think that the really smart move would be to kind of shore up one of those positions, you know, as best you can as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So that you're not, you know, like you said, kind of showing your hand to other teams if someone does drop to you. I think they're in a good place, to be honest with you, in a lot of positions. Those two that you mentioned, you know, they've got to, you know, address clearly. Outside linebacker, to me, I think was one of the ones that was most exciting to see the development over the course of the season, most exciting to see the production. We knew as the season went on, though, that at least one of those old guys, if not two, is not going to be seen again in a Ravens uniform. And look, the reality is other teams, and we'll find out in the offseason, I suspect other NFL teams are going to be calling Justin Houston as soon as possible.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think JPP is going to get the same love. I think he's the guy that they could have back. But let's save that for our prognostication segment for just a minute. I'm going to mention really quickly the field. This is if the trivia question happens to come up of guys who got snaps for the Ravens at outside linebacker in 2022 ever comes up. Ada Ochu, 8 snaps. Copeland, 51 snaps, Baltimore guy. Devon Kennard, a lot of talk about, you know, how he'd be the great Sam linebacker replacement. You know, at the beginning of the year, he finally got signed somewhere in the middle of the year and lasted 29 snaps. Stephen Means, parts of the first two games, 27 snaps total, injured on the first snap of the second game, which is a bummer. Vince Beagle, we mentioned, 0 snaps, but he was a real hope to be in there at Sam linebacker. Dalen Hayes, another hope at Sam linebacker, cut injured in the beginning of the year. So he's an odd choice because the Ravens still have his rights for 23, and I think they were ready to cut him outright. They obviously were because they cut him injured. But it'll be interesting to see if there's a place for him on the 90 for him to maybe try and win a job through hard work this offseason, camp, rehabbing, obviously all the things that go with it, because I think the Ravens might have been done with him before he was injured.
Really? You think so?
I think it's possible because
I
mean, they didn't have anybody. So obviously, if they thought there was a chance he could be back in any really reasonable period of time, they would have kept him.
And you know, maybe my recollection of the timing is not accurate here, but there were certainly a number of guys we brought in, Stephen Means, Vince Beagle. Mm-hmm. So I think the Ravens were definitely stacking their chips like, okay, one of these guys is going to be able to help us some. I thought Means played well. I thought there was a preseason game.
Yes.
Where he was in there against the twos. And I even said to some friends I was watching the game with, I was like, get Stephen Means off the field. Like, I don't need to watch Stephen Means kick these guys' asses, you know, any longer. He just looked like a guy who was a starter. Kind of like Likely in that Arizona game. He was like, get him off the field. You know, I've already seen enough. I don't know what his status is or Hayes' status is. I liked Kennard. I saw Kennard. He was with Arizona when we played them, and I thought he gave us a lot of trouble in that game. I think he was number 42 or number 43.
It's 2019 you're talking about. Yeah.
No.
You're talking about in the preseason.
Yes, you're right. In the preseason game this year, he gave us – actually, two of their OLBs in that preseason gave us trouble. You got to have special teams guys like Copeland, though. I kind of like him. He was with us for, 8-9 weeks this year?
I'm not sure if we need to actually kind of wrap this up. I'm sorry. I've got to keep doing it here. So let's talk a little prognostication and we'll do a few things of this. So if you're looking at JPP in Houston, again, I want you to come up with 3 probabilities that sum to 1. I mean, you're a math guy. I know I can put you in this position, but those 3, the probability of 0, 1, or 2 of them returning. And let's just each write that down here.
All right, let's see. JPP, Houston, and who?
It's JPP and Houston. So it could be either 0, 1, or 2 of them return.
Okay. Well, I think it's the probability that 0 return, I think, is incredibly low. We would be remiss if we didn't say those are reliable players and we know what we can get out of them at this point. The probability that zero of them return, I would say, is zero.
Okay. I have it at
10 50. Or less.
Okay. That's fair. I have it at 50 because I think that other teams might want them. And if there's a competition for them in the market, the Ravens are probably going to lose. But
definitely Houston, no doubt.
Okay.
Definitely Houston. There will be there. I expect the Super Bowl type teams, the teams competing for a championship, to absolutely want a guy like Justin Houston to play 18, 20, 22 snaps a game. No doubt about it. There'll be a market for him.
Okay. I think it's actually less likely that two return. I put that at about 10% overall and 40% for one to return. I think that's, I might even have that too low, but it's
yeah.
the most likely result probably.
I was going to say 10, 90, zero. I mean, okay. I think we're not doing our job if we're not seriously trying to get one of those guys to return. And the more likely is JPP, the more forceful and probably impactful is Houston. But unfortunately, how many OOBs can you carry who aren't going to play special teams? And that's why Copeland or even a Kennard or someone like that, having them, Harrison as well, is someone that's going to have a spot because they will play special teams. And I would never, ever, ever want to put Bowser, Owe, or Ojabo on a single special team snap.
All right. I always a pleasure to talk football with you, Coach. Great having you on. Love to get together for more off-season pods with you, whether we're talking about the draft or some other look forward stuff. But tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, and Twitter's increasingly becoming something that I, you know, try to put some content on. So All 22 Films on Twitter, and then All 22 Films on YouTube. And I actually tried to, like, you know, I'm trying to stave off old age, and I started a TikTok page where I put some videos on there as well. So, because that's what, you know, a lot of people look at, and it's very easy to do so. So those are the three social media platforms that I utilize. And, you know, appreciate you having me on. It's always fun. You guys do a fantastic job, you know, breaking down the game, talking about the game, and then all the data that you try to present to people too, to kind of educate the fans. I think Ravens fans are really blessed.
I really appreciate that, Coach. Means a lot coming from you. And I would really encourage people to give Coach a follow and make sure you check out his YouTube content and whatnot. It's very done very professionally. And the system behind it, he's let me look a little bit behind the curtain. It's very impressive in terms of how the video is aligned to plays and the other information you keep on it. So I really like it, I'll tell you, Coach.
It's fun, man. We did this in an hour, Coach.
I got a couple more things to say here before you. But wait, I'm doing a new series. I want people to DM me on Twitter if you want to do that one play. So one play in Ravens history that means a lot to you. Can be any play at all. And just bring your perspective to it, and we'll talk about it. If it's historic, that's great. If it was that big in that game, if it was first game you ever went to, if it's why you bought this guy's jersey, if it just was special to you in some other way, whatever that might be. This is a nice 15, 16, 17 minute opportunity for a show. And we're really trying to see if people would like shorter content and how they would gravitate towards that. Anyway, give me a DM and I'll get right back to you on doing that. We've already got 20 scheduled. So, and that was in less than a week. So please hit me up with this. Love to hear from you. Coach, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. It's always fun. You know, love what you guys do, like I said. So look forward to doing some stuff with you. Maybe before the draft, like you said, because it's always such a fun time to kind of try to project or prognosticate about, you know, what the Ravens are going to do. And our options seem a little less limited this year because, like you said, there's two positions we got to attack. So, yeah, look forward to doing something with you either before the draft or right after.
Sounds good. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.